doesn't that computer know who you
are? Don't they have any idea?
Bow down to the Tech Talk host.
That's right. That's right. That's right. That's right.
Behold the glory that is here.
A little while ago, I was installing some software, and I ran across this exact same
thing. I find you pompous, judgmental, and completely self-absorbed. Would you be my
onto a Windows Vista machine.
You'd think
there'd be no problem.
How could there be a problem with that?
I'd say in a given week, I probably only do about 15 minutes of real, actual work.
Directory permissions with config.msi directory, blah, 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 blah. This is Tech Talk. Good morning. This is Tech Talk. You're listening to Michael, Tech Talk Cast on WRLR, 98.3 LPFM in Round Lake Heights, Illinois. Man, we got a good show set up for you today. Dave is missing out. It's just me. That means you know what you're going to be in for today is a lot of ranting and raving probably, but you know what? I'm going to be tempered by some great guests this week. We've got not only the inimitable, the ubiquitous, the J. Garmin Encyclopedia Garmonica is going to be on with some geek trivia. Back at us again after the week respite that we gave him from last week when I was out in sunny California, and he's going to give us the answer to that week's geek trivia. That was an Apollo 1 question. I know he's got a new one queued up for us as well. And then after that, we're going to have a couple of guys on from Proximity Consulting. Now, they're going to talk to us about some pretty neat stuff that's happening in the industry of healthcare. I know a lot of the listeners that I hear from anyways are dealing with hospitals, healthcare. I mean, who isn't really? You know, everybody's got to have something to do with it. Well, there's a lot of things that can happen with technology that make life easier for not only you as a patient, but also too for the providers and doctors and so on. Communications and mobility is just, you know, I mean, gosh, where is it not needed these days? You know, you got cell phones in your pocket, tablets in your bag, and you want them to help you in your daily life. And these are some of the ways that they can. So above and beyond that, like I said, you know, I knew you were going to get some ranting and raving, right? It's funny. I was just talking to the sports guys who finished up just as I was coming on, and kudos to them. And I'm all on board with Rusty. Rusty's supporting the Pats this year over the Giants, even though the Giants are slated to win by a couple of points there. So he's about as clever as I am on his picks, but he's probably got a lot better reasoning for it than I do, which is just the fact that I don't like the Giants. So there you go. But if you're looking for some ways to watch and listen to the game this week, there are definitely ways to do it online. You can go to NFL.com and they'll let you watch and stream it. Now, it's probably going to be delayed stream by just a touch. It's not going to be quite as quick as you're going to get it on your TV, but for somebody that just wants to watch the game, man, that's the way to go. NFL.com. Also, it's a CBS, CBS produced show, so you can also go to CBS, and I believe they are also going to be demonstrating a show, or should be broadcasting that and streaming it live as well. So you can do that. Now, the other way, and this is the rant that I wanted to get on today, my little review here today has to do with listening to sports over the air, and in my opinion of Sirius XM radio, the satellite radio stuff. Now, those are regular listeners know that I've recently purchased a new car. I got a VW Passat. I love it. It's great. I'm not making recommendations for cars here. I wanted to talk about the technology that is in the car. I was kind of excited. I have never used satellite radio, and when you buy the new car, it's got satellite radio in it, and it comes free with three, 4 months, I think it's 90 days of free satellite radio. And I thought, awesome, this is great. I've been wanting to try this for a while. I'm a big user, as you know, of Slacker, of Pandora, of a lot of the streaming internet radio stuff. I literally do everything with my phone these days. I don't have an iPod anymore. I don't go usually even listen to terrestrial radio, I have to be honest and say. I podcast. You know, you can get this show podcasted to you, of course, at facebook.com/techtalkwrlr. You can go to our main websites as well, techtalk.wrlr.fm. And that's how I consume almost all of my audio media, is via internet access and via podcasting and things like this. So the idea of satellite, which meant that you'd have a different set of access to programming and also to just be, you know, always on, available, and same thing, whatever, and I drive more for my job now, sound like a great thing. There's a couple of problems with it. If you're thinking about looking into this as an investment for your transportation, you need to look into and think about how you're going to use it. Look at your current listening that you do and take a really close look at the offerings that satellite has. There's a couple of issues with it. Number one is, if you've already been using Slacker and Pandora and you've customized your radio stations and you can do that for free, you're probably going to be, as I was, a little disappointed in the range of selection that you had. It's not bad. Don't get me wrong. It's not terrible, but it's not customized to my specific and unique likes. Now, I have a pretty eclectic set of musical listening tastes, as a lot of people in radio do, so that could be part of it, is that I want what I want, and I'm not excited all the time with the musical choices, even flipping through the three or four stations that really seem to hit in my sweet spot most often. They're not there. So there is that. There's that to consider. However, the positive side of it is that, you know, I can have the stations pre-programmed. I don't have to mess around with it as much as I do with setting it with my phone. And I can have stations preset that are for the kids and that are for other people in the family. So it makes that easier. So I will say that for it. It's just for my own personal listening. I'm not excited about it. The other thing that I've noticed consistently is the audio quality is far inferior to what I get through my phone, through the streaming Bluetooth audio on my streaming internet, 3G internet on the phone. Somehow that audio quality is much better than what I get through the satellite, which that surprised me. That surprised me a great deal. It just doesn't compete. If you're an audiophile or consider yourself someone who likes to hear their music at decent quality, I would definitely knock Sirius out of the running just for that alone, or generally satellite radio that alone. Positive side of it, though, I want to give the flip side to this again, is that if you are a big listener of news, the satellite radio has a fantastic selection of news and talk stations, easily accessible, and the audio quality does not matter for those, so it's fantastic for that. I will give a big thumbs up on that part of it. And also too, of course, with sports now, Sirius is one of the only ones, I think the only one, they've got an exclusive deal for broadcasting the Super Bowl. So, I can be driving around and listening to the Super Bowl in my car on the satellite, no problem tomorrow if I want to. So that is the pluses to that. The big downside for me though is, when you weigh that all out and then you look at the cost for the year, just ain't worth it as far as I'm concerned. But again, you may want to look at that. I just wanted to give my little two cents on that new technology that I was excited about and then maybe didn't get into as much as I wanted to. You know, and there has been a lot of things going on with technology this week. I want to bring kind of sad story to the fore right now. Micron is one of the largest memory chip makers, and they've been around for a long time, 30, 40 years. And Steve Appleton, the CEO, he's been CEO there. He's one of the longest running CEOs in any technology industry or business at all. He joined Micron in 1983. He became CEO in 1994. after being the COO for 3 years. And sadly, he was just killed in a plane crash at the age of 51 out in Idaho. And so, you know, our hearts and prayers go out to his family and his friends, and certainly too to Micron, who is going to be struggling with finding someone new at the helm for the first time in, 17 years. So that's kind of a tough thing. Now, Steve Appleton was a risk taker. He was flying experimental planes. That was part of his joy and his love, was not just flying, but flying on the edge. And this was, the unfortunate result of that. So you'll probably be hearing a lot about that, a lot about him and his life. I've really heard, a lot of wonderful things about him. And of course, Micron has hung on and has done some really good things in the industry, even through these tumultuous, past several years. So something to think about with that. In other bad news, if you were one of those guys who was watching Woot and wound up grabbing some refurbished Motorola Zooms, because Woot, if you don't know about Woot and you like cheap tech, you got to check it out. It's woot.com, woot.com. You can get some great deals on there. In fact, I bought a tablet for my wife on woot.com just fairly recently. Well, you could have about a month ago gotten a Motorola Zoom, a refurbished Motorola Zoom, and very cheaply on there. Great deals and so on. And what was really nice as an added bonus is that some number of them, about 100 that you got in your order would have had a lot of personal information about somebody who originally owned them. It turns out that Motorola, although they refurbished a batch of about 6,200 Zoom Wi-Fi tablets, did not do a great job of erasing about 100 of them. And so a lot of people got a little more information and a little more juice in their Zoom than they expected. So if you were one of those people, and this is the word of warning now, if you were one of those people that purchased a Zoom brand new, back in between March and October of 2011, and then wound up saying, hey, this just ain't for me, it's a little too thick, or, you know, I don't like honeycomb, or whatever the deal is, and returned it, you may have been one of those people that did not get their information cleared off. So you'll wanna maybe take a look at that. One last thing too. You know what? I gotta head back for just a second. I forgot. I was gonna mention when we were talking about NFL. Talking about this Zoom tablet and so on reminded me, NFL.com has actually got a mobile app that you can use to watch it as well. Now, it's only going to work with Verizon connections if you're using it as a mobile, trying to watch the show mobily, trying to watch the big game. But it does also work to give you some other information about social buzz on the game, the NFL huddle, they call it. It also too will give you real-time traffic and parking info and directions to the nearest restrooms in the Lucas Oil Stadium if you happen to be one of those lucky people that is down there in time for the game. They also, too, there's a lot of other places you can go get information. Of course, Twitter and social media and Google is going to have lots of info going on about that. So I apologize. I just wanted to bring that up because it was part of what I wanted to tell you if you're looking forward to the game. And who isn't? Who isn't looking forward to this game? It should be a lot of fun. We mentioned Android. I mentioned Micron. But the one thing we haven't talked about is, buying this kind of technology, especially Apple technology, is getting a little more difficult depending on where you live. Specifically in Germany. Germany's banned Apple's iCloud But they're allowing you to get the iPhone 4 and the iPad 2 spared from a second ban. Because they'd originally, if you remember on the show, we talked about this about a month or so ago, that Germany had banned the iPad 2 and the iPhone from sale in Germany because they felt that it was a trade dispute. There was they want to recover from a dispute that's saying that Apple had been stealing and using product and technology and a look and feel that had been already in use from other customers. And so there was a big dispute about this. There's a lot of things going on. Now the iCloud is being blocked until Apple can appeal or settle a dispute that was that's between them and Android. So it's really going to be an interesting thing, because of course Apple has been attacking Android phone makers and saying that Android has been stealing its ideas. And that's been a big issue as well. So, if you're in Germany and you're trying to buy an Apple, maybe not the greatest idea. Maybe you'll want to go with an Android phone, just because at least Android's not getting hammered over and over again and told that they can't sell their equipment there. So, be interesting to find out what happens with that, of course. Always exciting stuff. And speaking of exciting stuff, you know what time it is? It's time for us to give our good friend Jay Garman a call. Let me see if I can pull his phone up here, and I think he's going to join us right away, because I know I sent out a little Twitter this morning and asked him if he was going to be around, and he definitely was. And of course, without Dave here, we need all the support we can get on the show.
Hello.
Good morning, Jay. Great to hear your voice. How you doing?
Not too bad. From the desperation in your voice, I'd say Dave isn't there today, is he?
Dave is not here. I'm struggling once again today. Flying solo. Dave just doesn't realize, how much glue he adds to the show. And that's because he doesn't listen to the show, I don't believe, when he's not around. So
he must not, because we're still on the air.
Yes, this is true. This is true. Nobody has shut us down yet. Today could be the day, though. I figure every day is a new day and a new chance for somebody to take enough offense at what we do that we'll be shut down at some point. how's life down your way?
Well, we're not in Denver, so we're good. I got some associates that are out in Colorado way, and they woke up at the planet Hoth this morning, whereas we're just getting rain. I'm totally cool with rain, as opposed to looking for AT-ATs and Imperial Walkers. We don't want that.
Yep. Yeah, I was speaking to a friend of mine in outside of Denver yesterday, and he was saying, yeah, it hadn't been too bad yet. They'd had about 18 inches, and the biggest problem was nowhere to put the snow if more was to come, and they were expecting another 6 to 9 inches. So, yeah, you got some work to do if you're out that way.
Yeah. Now, once again, you'll get no sympathy from anyone in Buffalo or Syracuse. They're like, yeah, whatever. It's not measured in yards, so we don't care.
Exactly. And the thing that I always find fascinating by this too, especially now that I'm traveling a little bit more from my job, is that you would think, well, gosh, things are fine in Chicago, they're fine in the Midwest, so going to O'Hare, I'll have no problems. I'll just hop on my plane and I'll fly. Especially if I'm going to like Dallas or something. But you don't realize how intricately connected our airways are, and the fact that these planes that you're flying from Chicago to Dallas or wherever, those come from other parts in the country, and yeah, some snow in Denver can actually make your flight canceled, even if the skies are sunny and birds are chirping around this area.
Well, yeah, actually, I think that's going to be very bad these days, because don't quote me on this. This is not one of my assured trivia facts, but I'm pretty sure that the Denver airport is now the busiest airport in the country for passenger flights. Hmm. I think it has eclipsed both Atlanta Hartsfield and Chicago O'Hare and JFK as the busiest airport. So that's a bad thing if you live you know, west of the Mississippi.
Yeah.
It's not going to go well for you.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Wow. Wow, I hadn't realized that. I knew, yeah, at one point I knew O'Hare was up there, and we heard about that a lot. And there, I think the, probably the difference is whether, how you define the air travel, and like you said, the busiest, passenger travel, is from that Denver airport. I think that Chicago probably still has, the most actual travel, just because of the, if you add in all of the non-commercial passenger travel.
Yes, well, and my humble hometown of Louisville, Kentucky, actually is in the top 20, despite being nowhere near that in market size of overall air traffic, because the UPS air hub is here, because we're basically in the middle of the eastern half of the United States. So we get a lot of, like, there's like a little airport for people, and then you go like a mile south, and there's this giant airport for UPS that no one notices unless you're driving down I-65 a little bit further. It's like, wait, we've like been driving for like 5 minutes and nothing but heading south. Everything on the right has been UPS for like 5 minutes, and we're going 70 miles an hour. Welcome to Worldport, you know? It's just huge.
Man. Yeah, you see a lot of those brown trucks driving around, which actually there was a really interesting article on, I think it was one of the, I think it was BBC maybe had this out, had produced this, it was a written article on, what would happen if the flow of semis and trucks and supply of that was for some reason to stop, if trucks were no longer able to make their way around, just around England it was talking about, and it was astonishingly quick how the resources that we rely on daily, fuel, food, water, and so on, would essentially just be gone within a matter of days if trucks were no longer able to make any trips around the country.
Yeah, well, Charles Strauss, my favorite sci-fi author, talks about this a lot, because we basically, since the advent of computerized logistics in the mid to late 80s, we've gone, like, the fixed cost of warehousing has just been done away with. Everything is just-in-time delivery. Yep. So it goes from the factory to there are no distributors anymore.
Yep.
It just goes straight from the factory to retail. And when that breaks down, you're hosed, because there's no intermediary stockpile.
Yep, exactly. Yeah, no more bananas for you, man. They, and that, I mean, you know, yeah, we could get into the whole, I mean, how astonishing it is that we can have, you know, Brazilian fruits here in Chicago in January and February, literally within a day or so of them being pulled off of the trees, and you know, how astonishing that is just from a logistics standpoint. But yeah, when that logistics gets fouled up one way or the other, this is a big problem. So.
Yeah, it's strange how much little things like that kick in. I was watching a special last night, because I have a six-week-old, so I don't sleep, about fried chicken, which, of course, is big in my home state. And apparently until the late 20s, fried chicken was a seasonal dish, because you couldn't get chickens to lay eggs when there wasn't, like, a lot of sunshine. It wasn't until they figured out you could put vitamin D in the chicken feed where they lay eggs in winter. So basically the idea of year-round fried chicken is just the last two or three generations. Before that, you couldn't have it.
Huh. Interesting. I didn't realize that. I knew that, I knew that chickens, you know, the neat thing about chickens, of course, is that they don't need to be fertilized in order to produce eggs. But I didn't realize that they only would do it if they had enough vitamin D, or if they had sunshine. I guess I'm not close enough to the earth is the problem.
We work with computers, man. This earth stuff is for hippies.
Exactly. I'm right there with you. I like to eat it, but yeah, I don't need to know necessarily about it. speaking of being close to the earth or not being close to the earth, as the matter may be, I know our geek trivia question from 2 weeks ago now had to do with the Apollo 1 and the Apollo 1 crew's practical joke. Why don't you fill us in and answer that one for us?
Well, the question was, what Apollo 1 practical joke became basically standard policy unofficially, officially, for NASA It's a Apollo program after the death of that crew, and it's the code phrases used for manual navigation in spaceflight. Specifically, there are three stars, Gamma Cassiopeia, Iota Ursa Majoris, and Gamma Valorum, that the astronauts were trained to use as a visual reference when navigating in case any of their computer guidance failed, which happened a lot, actually. And during the training program, the three Apollo 1 astronauts didn't want to have to keep calling out Gamma Cassiopeia, Iota Ursa Majoris, Gamma Valorum. So they gave them nicknames. For Cassiopeia, it was Navi, which was Virgil Gus Ivan Grissom's middle name backwards. Iota Ursa Majoris was Denoses, which was second spelled backwards for Ed White II. And Gamma Valorum was Regor, which was Roger spelled backwards for Roger Chaffee. And they put this in their training documents. I mean, this is in all their training. Like, those are the code names when you call out what you're orienting against. And after those guys lost their lives, they kept using those code phrases for the whole rest of the Apollo series. When they called out star navigation for those stars, they used Nave, Denosis, and Regor as sort of a quiet tribute to those guys. And I can't get confirmed or not, but NASA may still use those code phrases. I'm not clear on whether they've ever retired them.
And why would you? You know, I mean, I think that's not only is it a clever thing, but it's a nice kind of homage to these guys that gave their lives to further the space mission. And even though it's just words spelled backwards, they picked some good words to spell backwards. They actually sound like something you would hear on Star Trek, one of the earlier Star Treks.
Absolutely. Well, and not just that, you're not going to mistake these for other words in garbled radio communications. Like, they had to be obvious code phrases, you know, and you don't want to be, you know, using like the phonetic, you know, what Gamma Cassiopeia would be, what, like Gary Charlie or something, or Gamma, you know, like, they don't want to go that way.
Exactly. Awesome. And I apparently didn't put the question up quickly enough on Facebook, the facebook.com/TechTalkWRLR site, because I didn't get a lot of responses or answers. I had customer Jones was sending me emails and posts on Facebook saying, where is the trivia question? And of course I was traveling, so I wasn't able to get it up in my usual speedy time. I'm of course being facetious with that, but so this next week's question, I promise listeners right now, I'm going to get this up on the air or on our Facebook page within the next day or two, so you'll have the full week in order to respond and answer before the next podcast comes out. So what is the one that they should be thinking about this week and that I can put up on Facebook for everybody?
All right, well, I'm going to do a Facebook IPO question, since apparently everyone's talking about the upcoming Facebook IPO, so I figured that'd be a little bit timely. And this one involves a little math and a little research, but of the people that stand to make the most from Facebook's IPO, there's a breakdown out there, and there's a lot of actually about seven investment funds that are going to make plenty, because they're the venture capital funds themselves, and one of those is the Facebook staff pool. But there are six individuals that are going to make more than pretty much everyone else. Three of them are the co-founders, Mark Zuckerberg, Dustin Moskovitz, and Eduardo Saverin. There are three other people that are going to make substantially more, multi-billions of dollars from the Facebook IPO if they hit their targets. So who are the three people besides the Facebook co-founders who stand to make the most from the Facebook IPO?
That is a great question, man. And it's not Warren Buffett.
No.
Not yet, anyways. So interesting. Yeah, you know, that is like the one thing that I did not cover this morning, in fact, was the whole Facebook IPO and how that's shaking out, just because there wasn't a lot of new information, in fact, to discuss at this point. It'd be interesting to see how that comes around, and if some of the shine is off these tech IPOs with the Groupon mess and some of the other things that have been a little disappointing as of late. I don't know if Facebook's going to fall. Facebook's kind of it's kind of a pretty unique deal. So we'll see how important that is in another month here.
Well, yeah, well, to me, Facebook is the greatest example of the underpants gnome philosophy of investment. It's like they have 800 million users. Something happens, profit. Well, what's that something? I don't know, but they have 800 million users. They must be able to monetize them somehow.
Yes. Exactly. Exactly. Somebody's going to make money off of this somehow. I don't know how, but it will happen. It will happen. what I'm even more curious to find out is I would love Zuckerberg to be one of the smart ones who just gets the valuation, dumps everything for cash and says, see you later, suckers, and flies off to Aruba, you know, or buys himself an island somewhere and is just done with it.
Well, what's funny is they talk about that when their Facebook stock gets so high, they're going to use it to do stock swaps through a bunch of acquisitions, like go buy Zynga, which is responsible for 12% of the revenue right now anyway if you don't cut Zynga's games, and just start bringing all that in-house. Because if there's people out there monetizing Facebook, it's just not often Facebook. But if they get their stock high enough, they'll just go buy everyone that's making money off Facebook and bring them in-house.
Sure, you know, and that's another smart thing to do. Absolutely. You don't see a lot of these guys doing that kind of clever stuff. And that would put them in a position then to truly be a competitor, or at least a comparable to Google, at least in the spread of what they can offer. Well, Jay, I've got to pull this to a close. I'm actually running a few minutes late, as usual, to bring on our next guest, who is Proximity Consulting. So we're going to have them on in just a second. But as always, thank you for your time. And I know people can find more about you at jgarman.net, and I always try to put those links up as well for people when they're looking around on our site as well.
I appreciate it, buddy. You have a good weekend.
Yep, you too. Take care and enjoy the rain that is not snow yet.
Exactly.
All right. Take care. Jay Garman from all over the place now. Back Up a Fi is his most recent thing, an adventure that he's with. And we are going to take just a incredibly short break while I get things set up for our next call, which will be in just a moment. So stay tuned, and we'll be right back at you. You're listening to WRLR, and this is Tech Talk.
You're listening to 98.3 FM, WRLR LP, Round Lake Heights, Illinois.
WRLR is community radio.
I feel much more informed with what's happening today.
When we say community, we really mean it.
It's not like corporate, and it's just a good station, yeah?
We don't belong to some large corporation that makes a profit from this station.
Because I like the diversity.
And listeners won't be forced to listen to large blocks of advertising. Operations at community radio stations are made possible through grants and underwriting from companies within this area of operation, and donations, funds, and equipment, services, and time from area residents who volunteer their time to get involved.
It's as if it's my next door neighbor talking to me, only he's on the radio instead of next door to me.
Real people just like you.
I like them. They tell it like it is.
Local focus, local news, local music of the local people and by the local people.
It's different than the rest of the stuff I hear.
I love the show. I listen every day.
WRLR.
Coming up on the ADHD Radio Network.
Steve.
Are we on?
Did you know that frogs never drink?
Why is that?
Because it makes them jumpy, Bob.
Breaking news. The Energizer Bunny's been arrested and charged with battery.
For this and more comedy, listen to the Improv Comedy Show on WRLR 98.3 Radio, 7 to 8 p.m. on Thursdays.
Steve Rosen.
Yes, good morning, Steve. This is Michael with Tech Talk on the Tech Talk Show. I'm glad we got through to you. You know what? I'm having some trouble bringing in Jeremy, and that hopefully won't slow us down here. Hold on just a second. I'm gonna try and give him a call through again right now. I apologize,
okay.
Steve. While I'm doing that though, why don't you share with us a little bit about your background and who you are?
Sure. I'm the VP of Strategy and Business Development at Proximity Communications.
Mm-hmm.
And Proximity is based in Tampa, and we're an applications developer, a software company, and also a communications company. Our focus is on software solutions, cloud-based solutions for mobility, and also other kinds of communication services.
Fantastic. And I know what we want to talk about today is specifically the changes in healthcare solutions and things that are happening and things that are happening in the market that are forcing us to rethink the way that we do communications and rethink the way that we collaborate with our healthcare providers and our patients and so on. And I think that we've just got Jeremy online as well. Jeremy, are you with us?
I sure am.
Fantastic, fantastic. I apologize for the, as usual, a little bit of confusion on the Tech Talk show as we try to bring everybody on air. And I was, Jay Garman is our geek trivia runner, and he knows the drill by now that, when my co-host is out, I tend to be even more scattered than I usually am. And unfortunately, this is one of those weeks, so.
That's all right.
So, Jeremy, Steve just gave us a quick rundown of Proximity and himself a little bit. Can you introduce yourself and your role with Proximity?
Absolutely. I'm pretty heavily focused on the healthcare applications that Proximity is building and building a platform, program, products, and services around really helping every piece of the continuum of care, whether it's the patient, the provider, the payer, the actual businesses in the industry, with capabilities of telehealth and building mobile health applications along the way. So my background is very, very heavy healthcare. I started my career out of Auburn with HealthSouth Corporation, which is a national chain of rehab hospitals, and then moved for about 8 years to be a product specialist with a global orthopedics and wound care company, and now most recently with Proximity, and excited to be sort of on the cutting edge of what's going on in healthcare and the changes you're going to be seeing soon, if not already.
Great, great. That's perfect. And I have a little bit of a healthcare background myself too, so don't worry about losing me when we start discussing some of this. One of the things that we talk about a lot on air here, of course, is some of the consumer side applications. Fitbit and Nike Plus, even, and ways that we can kind of life graph ourselves and manage our own health, specifically on the fitness side. But some of those same applications and some of those same processes are starting to filter their way in to legitimate healthcare situations in that way that doctors and patients can interact. What have you seen happening with that?
Well, it's a shared problem, and that's where America is right now, really the world, but focusing on America. You clearly have a healthcare system that whether everyone realizes this or not, about 75% of all spending in healthcare, it goes to those people with one or more chronic conditions. Mm. They're only 25% of the spending of everyone else on all the other, medical issues get spent there. So not only are we not preventing illness as well as we could, which affects the patient clearly, and some of their involvement in their self-care, if you will, could really help that, but also we're spending way too much and not doing enough really on the chronic side to get that number down. The reality is right now, somewhere around 2000, I think we had about 125 million people in America with a chronic disease. And by 2030, wow, there'll be 46 million more of those. So it'll be somewhere in the 170 million people with a chronic disease. And so something has to be done to, one, for the country to reduce the spending in healthcare. And number two, for the consumer is to, prevent those diseases, or at least manage them once they're in place. So it's sort of a shared between provider and consumer problem in mobile health and these medicine at home sort of telehealth kind of programs is how it's going to have to happen. And really, we're already starting to see that, and I think we're seeing really good results to start bringing those numbers down and maybe improve our reality of our healthcare system.
Mm-hmm. Well, and that's one of the problems I think that we're talking about here is that, of course, when you've got this increasing number of individuals that have chronic issues, which are issues then that are typically going to require more regular and consistent care, more regular and consistent face-to-face visits currently, but are percentage-wise, the number of doctors and providers is not increasing at the same rate. So this mobile solution and this mobile tech is a way that doctors and hospitals can provide the same or even better level of care, but to a growing population. Is that reasonably well summed up, or am I missing a piece of that?
No, I think that's exactly the problem and solution. So I think you hit the nail on the head there.
Now, is there an issue, though? I mean, of course, it always comes back to insurance, you know, and I know, you know, there's the Obamacare stuff, and I don't even want to touch on any of the politics of all this and all, but, you know, one of the ways that doctors are currently evaluated and providers are currently evaluated is by the amount of time and by the amount of face time that they actually spend with patients. How is moving to this more of a mobile tech and being that one face away from the patient going to impact their revenue stream and going to impact their ability to report accurately the efforts that they're taking with patients?
Well, you know, I'll give you a view of what happened. Let's just take one patient as an example. Let's say that patient has diabetes. You know, there's a lot of patients with diabetes out there, somewhere around 25, 26 million. And let's take one of those patients. In the past, let's call it, they would go to their doctor one time, pay for that visit, drive there, all the gas cost and the time cost that the consumer has to give up. Then there's time with the doctor, and that's cost to him as his staff, the administrative time and the cost of the building itself and the power and the lights and all those things you have to build in. Then there's cost as the patient goes home because they might use a call center or have an administrator up front give the patient a call that next Thursday to ask them what their glucose levels are and all these other questions that you might have as a clinician to the consumer. Then that patient would come back to the office to recheck their blood. So anyway, you have this multi-touch, multi-cost, high-cost process. And with mobile health, that patient stays in their home, goes to a touch screen, enters in their glucose levels, enters in automated responses that they're okay or that this is what their situation is. You can eliminate the phone call. You can eliminate the second visit. So you go to having one primary visit to your physician if needed, to self-managing all the data and information and health stats, if you will, that help manage a chronic disease. The physician can even get alerts if your blood level, when you enter it, is lower than they'd like to see it. So they can proactively get in touch with you instead of finding that out 3 days later at your meeting. And in those 3 days, think of the health declination that's happened with that patient. So not only is the patient getting faster, more appropriate care, because the whole process is sped up, the cost is lower, the overall cost of healthcare is lower because there's less interactions between physician and provider and patient. Mm-hmm. But then also because you can push and pull with, it's a two-way communication, you're also being able to give alerts to family members, alerts to other care providers, a neighbor that might be involved in helping care for that patient. Whoever that is in that person's inner circle, so to speak, can also be clued into all of this. So all of a sudden, you have a patient with a chronic condition of diabetes that now has teammates that are aware of what's going on, their provider is aware of what's going on, and now more clean and faster data is accessible by the people who make the proactive decisions to manage that disease, whether that's change a medication, whether that's have them in for a consultation, whether that's to send a rehab nurse out to their home. In that way, we can reduce some of those, you know, I think we said 170 million people that are having chronic conditions, or at best, better manage it.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Now there's a couple of questions that immediately come up to my mind when I'm hearing the description of this. First is, you've got this aging population with chronic disease, but we're going to be asking them to take more of a more responsibility on their own for managing the information that is provided to their healthcare, and that's of course going to require some technological pieces. And as any of us who have had their parents or even grandparents come over to their house for Thanksgiving with their computers, you know that the aging population tends to be less capable of adapting or adopting new technologies. How, you know, do you not see that as being an issue here, or you know, what ways is this going to be practical for someone who's already got a lot to struggle with?
No, it's a huge issue. I mean, probably the biggest issue. So that's insightful there by you. You know, what's being done about it is when these programs first started coming out to the market, it was log onto this website and download this and fax it here and we'll send you a text. I think it was over too much, even sometimes for the provider, because there was communications going everywhere and it wasn't tightly, you know, processed. Now, companies like ours are putting out applications to the consumer where it's as easy as an automated voice says, please talk into the device and let me know what your glucometer reading was, or let me know if you slept well last night, or let me know if you've, if you're feeling well, let me know if you have a temperature, whatever the automated questions, depending on the chronic disease that they're managing, that patient can then either touch a button or simply speak. And that message, that spoken message, or that touch button alert is then zipped right back to the clinician or whoever, like I said, the teammates, whoever needs that information. And so there's not any technology needed. If they can use a home phone, they can use our solutions or other solutions that are out there that are more modern.
It's
a quick comment as well. I think your point, Michael, about the senior population has been true in the past, but if you look at the adoption of, for example, smartphones and tablets, the adoption rate is actually in the older population is going up significantly. It's probably the fastest growing segment. So as long as you're gearing your solutions, your applications towards a simplified kind of approach, you know, you're not trying to make it too complicated, and you have some flexibility as to what kind of devices you're interacting with, whether it's a television, a computer, a smartphone, a tablet. I think that'll make all the difference.
And from my own personal experience, I know I was surprised, I guess not shocked, but I was certainly very surprised is that my mother actually got a tablet recently, and she's in her late 60s, early 70s here, and has had really surprisingly little difficulty with getting to the things that she wants to. And I guess it's one of those, if it's something that people really want to do, they'll figure it out, as long as they're given a little bit of help, you know, a little bit of push here and there. The other thing that came up in my mind when you were discussing this communication process and so on is that we right now in the healthcare industry, there's a huge discussion, I don't want to say debate, but it kind of is, over standardizing data and making it so that the information that is held for you at your current hospital is just as legitimate and is understandable if you transfer to a new doctor in another state or in a different hospital. It sounds like, you know, there'd be some supposition here that there's going to be a standardized collection of information or some way to interface with the current data systems. How is that being looked at, you know, and with all this dealing with patients in that level?
Yeah, those will always, for now, be two buckets. You're right, they will start being integrated. The electronic health record, the electronic medical record, the EMR, is going to be heavily HIPAA managed, and it's going to be heavily isolated. And that is your private medical condition, your private medical statistics and information data, which is going to stay separate but attached to what your managed disease condition is. In other words, it's different to ask, a physician to look up something like what is their height or what are their comorbidities, what other diseases do they have. That kind of information is not accessible just to anyone. That's why there's HIPAA laws in place. However, we could run, in applications like this, a diary type of application that does tell me your sleep pattern. It does tell me what your diet has been. It does tell me information that you've automated and put into my system. It does tell me things that are very important in the management of a patient, but might not be more, might not be in a, an EMR type data field. So they will be attached, but probably tough to integrate the two, because of privacy issues.
And I know, and we've talked to people on air here as well about even doing some kind of basic things. We had the CEO of ZocDoc on, who talked about allowing patients to make appointments online, regardless of the doctor or system that they're trying to work with. And I know that there just seems to be a ton of kind of integration issues, and hopefully hopefully some of that can be worked out on the back end at some point.
Yeah, and that's going to be key, and I think it will be. I think there's a lot of people at work. It's just like anything else, political or controversial. There's people who think that none of this data should be available to clinicians and people outside of the individual, and then there's a huge group of folks, like you just said, who think, I'm not sure if they're reading the numbers or not, but 170 million people with chronic diseases seems we should, change some things up. But sooner or later, there will be data points that are whether you're in Michigan or come down to Florida for the winter, or whether you go to, North Carolina to see your daughter and something happens, whatever. Mm-hmm. Wherever you are, they'll be able to get not only your EMR-type data, but your chronic condition-type data. Because you have to remember, this isn't just about diabetes and chronic heart failure and COPD. I mean, those are the prevalent conditions in the marketplace. This absolutely could be about obesity. It absolutely could be about quit smoking. It absolutely could be about stress in the workplace. It could be about, anger management. There's all kinds of quote-unquote conditions out there. We focus on chronic disease because it's, again, 75% of the spend in this country, so it's an obvious focus. But a platform like this, the idea of telemedicine, absolutely, because it's right in your home, it's immediate, it gets you access to immediate resources. It gives your caregiver provider immediate feedback that they can react to. It could be anything in the healthcare spectrum. So at some point, the data is going to be really powerful as we continue to collect it.
Yeah, and you started to touch upon some things too, which lead me into sort of the location tracking aspect of these tools, that since they're coming with GPS units on our smartphones and so on, opening that up to your provider would allow them to do some things which might seem rather intrusive, but I think would be extremely useful to people, for example, for weight loss, or I'm even thinking for people that are struggling with alcoholism. If their provider sees that their GPS unit has tagged that they're going near a bar or in a bar, it's a good time for a phone call and following up with that. Now, I know that you've got location tracking stuff more on fleet management and things like this, but are you starting to look at ways that you can integrate? And I came up with an example, obviously, completely off the top of my head. But is there an element of that in the location tracking that you're working with?
Jeremy, yes. Just a quick response.
Yes.
I think besides the location tracking, what we're looking to do and what our platforms are supporting are complementary technologies. So if there's concern, you want somebody, for example, a senior, to be able to, have quality of life and live at home. Mm-hmm. But being able to integrate, for example, with security systems and get data from there, being able to integrate with other kinds of complementary technologies like electronic scales and blood pressure monitors, and then you combine that with your location tracking, where you can do what's called geofencing and breadcrumbing. You can know at any given time, as well as during the course of a day or longer period, where somebody is, and have appropriate alerts be generated if there's an issue with that.
When you lose some of these people with Alzheimer's or other issues, and they can't find them, and this would be a way around that.
Right, especially if you integrate also with things like security systems and so forth, so you have multiple kinds of data points and tools.
And the last piece I'll throw in there, the, where it truly gets integrated, because the GPS, like you said, for Alzheimer's, like Steve was saying, with sensors on the front door to let you know your, you know, grandmother or mother left the house and she has Alzheimer's, that's a good time to make a phone call or have a neighbor check, to your point. The last point of that, though, is just like, let's go back to the alcohol, you know, alcoholism example or the obesity example. If that person who has a, you know, poor teammates and they've been in treatment for those conditions, let's say they end up at a buffet or the alcoholic ends up at a bar, it also has communication the other way. There's a button they can push to give them direct access to their person who gives them strength or, you know, whatever that program has been set up, their counselor or whoever it is, immediately. Send them a text, send them a phone call, hey, I'm in a bad spot here. That GPS location then comes up. They know where they are. They can go right to them. There's a lot of things you can do to customize a program for this kind of, with this kind of, you know, powerful tool.
Excellent.
And other kinds of information and motivational kinds of reminders that are coming in, whether it's via text or, you know, whatever means it is, just to remind somebody, what their goals are, what their objectives are, you know, little helpful, hints and encouragement. You know, we haven't talked about it, but you know, oftentimes medication prescription is an important part of this, and being able to remind somebody that it's time to order their medication or to flag the appropriate caregiver or person if somebody hasn't taken their medication. There have been some great results on outcomes, you know, based on the use of those kinds of tools.
Oh yeah, yeah. No, that's an aspect I didn't even think about. That's absolutely right. Those automated reminders, but then also too the personal touch follow ups to making sure that, especially as people get older and have more and more medications to take and more confusing medications to take, and then of course too, because that's being recorded, that is part of their history now. That it's not a you know, they come into the doctor's office and he asks them, what have you been taking, and maybe they remember. Maybe they don't. Maybe they've been taking what they say they have, and maybe they're just feel embarrassed that they keep forgetting it, so they don't tell the doctor that they've forgotten to take it for the last 2 weeks. You know, those types of issues just kind of evaporate when you're managing it, managing the care in this way.
Yeah, that's a good point. Absolutely. And even more so, a lot of patients will show up, and I know it's a very big frustration for the healthcare industry, and say, yeah, I did stop taking that. Well, that was 4 days ago, because maybe they got the jitters, or maybe it gave them a headache, because there are side effects to these drugs.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the general consumer is going to have to get better at that, but they're not right now. You should immediately call your doctor, if that's the case, not go off your drugs for 4 days until you have another appointment,
because yeah.
They could prescribe you something, they could change the medication, they could tell you that the side effect is normal. So that this system really helps with that as well.
Yep. Yep. And I've played around with some of the, you know, the mobile, PDRs and things like that as well, so that you can, you know, if you're thinking about, oh gosh, I've got a cold, is it okay for me to take Robitussin, or is there something in there that's going to interact poorly with the other medicines that I've got? And this would be like one step even beyond that, being able to actually make that evaluation, with a qualified, health professional. You know, and I apologize, Steve, and Jeremy, I've got to pull us to a close here, but I know you guys are both representing Proximity. Can you provide, where can people go for more information about Proximity or about the things that we're talking about and the devices that we're that we've been discussing?
Sure. Our website is proximity.com, and you know, Jeremy and I would also, we're pretty easy to reach via phone or email, so we'd be happy to answer any questions that people have. I'm steve.rosen@proximity.com, and Jeremy's jeremy.hillman@proximity.com, you know, we appreciate you having us on the show, if anybody has any questions or wants to look up any information, that would be great.
Fantastic.
And that's Proximity with an I.
Oh, exactly. Thanks, Jeremy.
I was going to mention that once we got... to get over here. I will also too put those links on the podcast page and for the Facebook page as well. And thank you guys. It's been a real pleasure having you on. Great information, and as I expected, Steve, a lot more than half an hour could contain. So there's definitely a lot more information out there and available for people to look into. Appreciate your time, and have a great weekend.
You too.
Thanks, guys.
Hey, thanks for having us. I appreciate it.
Yep. Bye. Steve Rosen and Jeremy Hillman from Proximity with an I. Let's take a look at that. And, of course, as usual, I'm way over time here, especially since we don't have Dave here to yell at me. I'm not going to do a cool site of the week. That's going to be the cool site is Proximity.com. What I am going to do, though, is I am still going to leave you with a podcast, only song of the week. I love this. This is a fantastic song. It's Carolina Chocolate Drops is the artist. The song is Hit 'Em Up Style. You're going to love this. It's at least I hope you do. I did. And we will be back at you next week. You are listening to Tech Talk on WRLR 98.3 LPFM in Round Lake Heights, Illinois. Thanks for listening, everyone. Talk to you next week.
I was beaming in his beamer, just beaming. Can't believe that I caught my man cheating. So I found another way to make him pay for it all. So I went to Neiman Marcus on a shopping spree. And on the way, grabbed Soleil and Mia. And as the cash box rang, I threw everything away. Your hands on his cash and spend it to the last time for all the hard times. When you go, then everything goes from the crib to the ride in the clothes. So you better let him know that if he messes up, you gotta hit him up. From the crib to the ride in the clothes, so you better